Last time we went through the fourth and the fifth commandments, and we mentioned about that for the fourth commandment, we have to, for what should be doing, that we show respect, love, also helping and obey our parents, and also proper authority. And then what is the opposite would be what we shouldn't do. You know, instead of love, we show contempt. Instead of respect, we have disrespect. Instead of obey, disobey. Instead of helping, not caring, neglect. And also we talk about the obedience can be exception. You know, when those in authority command us to do something wrong against the God, the law of God, then we are not obliged to obey, because for positive precept there can be exception. And we're also talking about our mention about our duty as citizen also to follow the just law of the country. The fifth commandment, we talk about that we have to look after not only the body but also the soul. So we have to look after the body and the soul. And so for the body, we heard about that the sin against the fifth commandment would be, you know, hurting people, killing. But also we talk about, you know, using drugs and getting drunk, and we're talking about beginning and end of life are the most vulnerable. And so we're talking about issues like abortion, we're talking about euthanasia, and I don't know if I mentioned that the other catechism book I give you, the Q&A catechism book, would be more extensive in those issues, because it's a book that is newer than this one. So Father John Harden have, you know, he died around the year 2000. So he actually, when he wrote the catechism, he also have that more up to date of the modern moral issues. So he would more extensive of those moral issues in the other catechism book. And then it's also we're talking about last time that we have to avoid putting ourselves or another person into unnecessary danger. That applies for the body, but also for the soul, that we should not put ourselves or another person into unnecessary danger for the soul. And so we have to avoid occasion of sin. So that's the fifth commandment. And so that's the fifth commandment also forbid us of causing scandal by our word, by our example or action to cause another person to sin. So we talked about the fifth commandment last time, and so today we will talk about the sixth and the ninth commandment, and then possibly we may actually finish all the commandments. We will see. So the sixth commandment and the ninth, the sixth is about action and the ninth is about thought and desire. It's a bit like the difference between the seven and the ten. The sixth is thou shalt not commit adultery, and the ninth is thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. And so the sixth commandment, we think about what we should do is to be pure in our word, in our actions. And then for the ninth commandment, what we should do is to be pure in our thought and desire. But also that is a virtue that protects chastity, and that is the virtue of modesty. Modesty is a virtue that protects chastity. And then on the other side, what we shouldn't do would be anything, you know, in word or action that is impure. That would be against the sixth commandment. And then thought and desire that are impure would be against the ninth commandment. And then immodesty would be, of course, the sin that quite often lead to the sins against chastity. It's important to understand that because life and sex cannot be separate. And sex is something holy, should be only within marriage. And so any deliberate seeking of sexual pleasure outside marriage, when doing that knowingly and willingly, will be a serious sin, a mortal sin that will require for confession. St. John Bosco, you know, we mentioned about him and he got his picture over there. You know, he got a lot of prophetic dreams about the virtue of chastity. And he also knew, you know, quite often in society and also among young people, many people fail in that virtue. And like the children of Fatima, you know, after they saw the vision of hell, Jacinta was always, you know, cannot forget about that vision. She did a lot of sacrifice, and they did a lot of prayer for sinners. And Jacinta really want to know what kind of sin that brought most number of people to hell. And then at the end of her life, you know, Jacinta actually saying out loud, it's a sin of the flesh. You know, she wanted to know what kind of sin is the one that really brought people to ruin of their soul. And so Our Lady seems to have granted her request to let her know the answer. And so it's a commandment that we have to know about, but also it's a commandment that we also have to pray, because we think about that purity of body. You know, I would think that even don't have to think, just we know that for as a fact that even non-Catholic can do that. You know, to be chaste in body. I think even non-Catholic can do that, but to be really pure in the heart, that is a gift from God. To be pure in the heart is something that we cannot just rely on our own efforts. It's something that we have to rely on supernatural help, on the grace of God. And so when St. John Bosco dreamed about, you know, impurity would brought people to hell and bring people and lose the grace of God, he also have in his dreams, he also mentioned about some of the natural means, but also supernatural means that help to achieve the purity of heart and body. Natural means will be, he always say, avoid idleness. Avoid being idle is really important. If somebody has nothing to do, it's easy to fall into sin. So St. John Bosco loved to see young people busy, you know, doing work, playing, praying, doing things, but not to be idle. And then also he in his dream, he always mentioned about confession, about devotion to the Holy Eucharist or frequent communion, and also devotion to Our Blessed Lady. So those are the things that he always mentioned again and again. Those three supernatural means: confession, communion, and devotion to Our Lady. And then he also talking about the importance to avoid the occasions of sin. So one of his dreams, actually, he saw a lady giving each of the young boy a handkerchief, beautiful one. And then the instruction was, you know, when there's wind, then you turn to the other side, or you put away the handkerchief. So in that dream, you know, when the wind came, some of the boy listened, the handkerchief was protected, but some of them, they didn't listen. And so it was like the wind actually blow it into pieces, destroy it. And so John Bosco later on, he understood the dream. The meaning was that the lady was Our Lady herself, and the handkerchief is the virtue of chastity. The wind is the temptation. When people know how to turn away from temptation, then their virtue is protected. And for those who do not, you know, then their virtue is destroyed. But also he saw that some of them, the handkerchief destroyed, but able to be repaired through the sacraments of confession. So he had dreams like that, you know, a good number of them, prophetic dreams. And sometimes he even had dreams that actually he was able to, in the dream, know all the students, where they are, you know, in the state of their soul. He can actually tell every single one where they are. Are they the one in the category that never lost their baptismal innocence? Or are they the one that belong to the bigger category that have lost their innocence but regained through repentance and confession? And there are those students who even look good outside, but they are the one who are stubborn in their sin. They always, you know, they would not go to confession. They would not confess their sin properly, and they just stubborn in their sin. And so St. John Bosco is a saint that do emphasize strongly on the virtue of chastity. And you think about, you know, he was dealing with rough boys, you know, in the oratory, hundreds of them, and able to, you know, instill that idea of chastity in their mind, which is quite something quite remarkable. So we think about deliberate seeking of sexual pleasure outside marriage would be a serious sin. And also we think about that it's not only with another person, but also with a person doing that by oneself, pornography or masturbation, that also is a serious sin, impure action. And we know that nowadays, you know, with the internet, that is a struggle for many men, a struggle for many people. It can be even a struggle for many women too nowadays. And so it's really important that we know how to avoid those temptations. And also to some, you know, I forgot who is that talking in the, is it in the Vatican or Holy See? It's a kind of conference. Also recommending adults to put their computer for the computer that children might be using in a more open area, like in the living room or in the dining room, so that they won't be by themselves, you know, using electronic device. And then some of the parents, they also mentioned that, you know, people have that experience. They also know nowadays it's, you know, not talking about to put a screen or filter on your internet or not. That is a must. You know, the question is what kind you're putting up to protect your children. So it's something to think about, you know, because nowadays, you know, the occasion of sin on the internet is pretty horrible. You know, in the old days, if the children are at home, you can be quite sure they are safe from bad influence. They are at home, they are protected. But nowadays, you cannot say something like that. You know, they are at home, they can still be really polluted by the world because of the electronic device that they can be so easily have access to. So it's something that we have to be aware of. Now, I'm thinking about, you know, the pure sin against chastity, you know, as long as it's outside marriage, if God institute it, then it's always a serious sin. And it's something that we need to go to confession. We need to be repentant, sorry about that. And then also about impure thought and desire, the same principle apply. You know, if people thinking about dirty thing for sexual pleasure, that a serious sin. Or people have that desire for somebody is not free to marry, have that desire for that person in a sinful way. You know, that also of course will be a serious sin. The virtue that really protect chastity is the virtue of modesty. Modesty, quite often I see that as respect of people as human person. Because modesty is about how we interact with people. So if a man treat people as a person, you know, you look at people with respect, you know, treat them with respect, that modesty. When a woman dress herself in a way that presents herself not as an object but as a person, that also is modesty. So we talk about, you know, people can be immodest by the way how you look at people, how you treat people, but also by the way how you present yourself. So we're talking about immodesty of dress, you know, and things like that. And immodesty of the sin of immodesty can be serious or not serious, depends on the danger that can cause to other people or to yourself. And so it's important, you know, that it's a virtue that protects chastity. But for me, I think about, you know, that modesty is really about respect, that you really treat people not as object but as person. Yeah, and I think the attitude is important for chastity. Quite often, you know, some people, they do say that people who struggle with chastity quite often also have the issue with charity. Because when people look at pornography or things like that, you are actually seeing people as object, not as person. You know, that's a lack of charity. But when you always see people as a human person, then you don't want to treat them as an object. You don't want to see pornography, things like that. You want to see people as person. And so I always think that, you know, and people do say that, you know, a lot of people, when they struggle with chastity, it's always an issue of charity there. So it's a virtue that is, I would say, fragile. When we have bad thought, you know, impure thoughts, or sometimes another kind of thought would be the thought that is against faith. One of the moral theologians, he mentioned that, you know, quite often the sins against faith or against chastity is a kind of bad thought we should not dialogue with in our mind. When they come, we should just dismiss them. Don't pay attention to them. Because the more we think about them, the more it just put us into a corner. It just disturbs our peace. because of the weakness of human nature, better to, you know, when we feel the temptation, when we feel being obsessed by those kind of bad thoughts, we should turn away from them. And that can maintain our peace much more easy and more easy to fight those temptations. So that's about the 6th and the 9th commandment. And then the 7 and 10, you know, 7 is about thou shalt not steal, and the 10 is about thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. So one is, again, is action, and the other one is about the desire and the thought that we have in our mind and heart. So stealing, you know, of course, what we should do is spare people property, honest, fair, just. And then the Ten Commandments, we should be strive for that period, poor in spirit. Now, when we're thinking about stealing, it can be serious or not serious, depending on how much we have stolen. When it is a huge amount, of course, it's a serious sin. If you steal a small amount, but intend to do it a lot of time to accumulate a huge amount, that can also become a serious sin. So somebody who make a trick on the bank machine, that everybody who take money out will automatically give you 1 cent, you know, that of course will be the intention to accumulate a lot. Or some, and there's a group of people, you know, is, I heard that, you know, a group of people, they would go to the library and each steal 1 volume of an encyclopedia. So they got a whole set, you know, eventually. So that's of course, you know, will be with the intention to accumulate a large amount. And the traditional principle is also what can constitute a large amount from the one that you stole from would be a person 1 day income. So if you steal a person 1 day income, that usually considered a serious sin. That's an old tradition. Huh? Of course, you cannot apply that in a really, you know, you cannot just say, you know, okay, Ross earned $120 per day, so we steal him $119.99, you know. So that would be a little bit, you know, playing with the principle. But, you know, that's a general principle, you know, about having in the moral menu and stuff like that. Of course, we shouldn't steal at all. Of course, it's a kind of sin that can omit a smallest of matter. If you steal a quarter, you know, if you steal a little cup of tea, you know, that's usually a small matter. The same applies to unjust damage. You know, if you purposely damage people's property, if it's something expensive, then it becomes a serious sin. Or you cheat a huge amount of money, you know, that would be a serious sin. The seventh commandment, though, something we have to keep in mind is that to obtain forgiveness, we must have the desire to repair, and it's called restitution. That means you do your best to return what has been stolen. If that's impossible, at least you try to give to the person that may be closest to that person or his heir or children. If that's not possible, the amount should be used for donation on that person's behalf. Even though you cannot do it all at once, do it little bit by little bit. So that is a kind of sin that need to have that intention to repair as much as possible. And then also, the Ten Commandments, you know, to steal something, I think the desire is that if you determine to obtain something in an unlawful means, that decision to do something wrong is already a sin. Sometimes a person might make up his mind to do something bad, but because the circumstance, you know, so I make the decision, oh, that's a beautiful cell phone. Make the decision, I will steal it when he is asleep, when he is falling asleep in the class, I will steal his cell phone. But it's happened that, you know, every time I try to get close, he wake up his eyes. And then, or every time I try to get close, the daughter keep an eye, you know. So I wasn't able to carry out the evil desire or evil decision. So that doesn't mean I don't have the sin, because the moment I make the decision to steal, I sin already in my heart. But of course, you think about that even for serious sin, among serious sin, you have been something that's more serious than the other. So if you actually put that into action, it's a more serious sin than just the decision to steal. And of course, if you have stolen something, then you have to do your best to make restitution. In the old days, you know, In the old days, sometimes the priest is the one who have to do that. You know, in the old days, sometimes people they are conscience. They have sometimes their conscience wake up. They have stolen something, so they give it to the priest in confession, and the priest has to keep secret. You know, so he will just give the money back to the person without telling who is the person who give the money. Yeah. So that sometimes that happened in the past. You know, people do make restitution through the priest. Now, so that's about the seventh commandment, and the tenth commandment, and then of course the eighth commandment. The eighth commandment is thou shalt not bear false witness. Some of the church fathers, I heard somewhere, a catechism book wrote that the church fathers say that one third of the sin has to do with the tongue, that we say something bad, we lie, we say mean thing, you know. It's true, you know. I live by myself, so I don't live with the cat. I think I avoid a lot of sins like that. But you're living with some people, you know. And before I came to Precious Blood, all my life I've been living with someone else. You know, it's always either a family, seminary, or another priest. I never lived by myself until in 2012, you know. And to help me to adjust to that, I got some cats. But anyhow, cat doesn't talk, so there's no eighth commandment committed. Now, for the eighth commandment, what we should do is that we should tell the truth. We set people good names. We should keep secret when it's necessary. So you know the opposite now, right? Instead of telling the truth, you tell a lie. Lying, generally speaking, is a small sin. Okay? But if you lie that dishonor God, let's say you lie under oath, or you lie that you deny yourself to be a Catholic, that would be a serious sin. Or you lie to cheat a whole amount of money, big amount of money, or you lie that cause people great harm, cause something to go to jail, become a big sin. Okay. So if the lie that dishonor God or cause great harm, that become a big sin. Otherwise, usually it's a small sin. So sometimes we do call surprise. People ask us something, we are a bit scared, then we just say something, and then we lie, you know, by out of fear. You know, I think it's more common that way, people lying. And so if that happened, of course we try our best to not to do it again. But it's not a sin that you need to go to confession immediately, because it's not a mortal sin, but we should do our best to make contrition as soon as possible. It's always good when we sin, we don't wait. We say sorry to God as soon as we can. You know, it's always a good practice. And then we have the other kind of, is the good name of people. So gossiping is not good. And Saint Jose Maria, the founder of Opus Dei, He gave a good advice. If you cannot say good thing about a person, then keep quiet. I think that's a good, really good principle to keep in mind. If you cannot say good thing about the person, just keep quiet. Now, gossiping can be either way. It can be something bad about the person you know about that. Aunt who doesn't know about it, and you just disclose that to other people or to another person without necessity. So that, quite often people say, you know, but it's true. That doesn't mean you can say that to people. Even though it's true, the person still has the right to his or her good name. So we should protect people's good name. So if the hidden fault is not known to other people, then just keep quiet. Unless you have to say, you know, sometimes you have to say it because you are so hurt, you need to talk to somebody. Then it can be legitimate. But if you just want to say something because I don't like that person, you know, because I love to, you know, to show how knowledgeable I am, you know, then it's not a good motive. Now, that's called detraction, when you say something true. That it's not necessary for you to say it. That harm people's good name. And then the other one is called slander, is when you make something up and then you spread the rumor. That's even worse, right? Because that involves lying. And now, for gossiping, if your gossip slightly harmed the person's good name, of course, that's a small sin. But if your gossip actually seriously harmed the person's good name, or even destroyed the person's good name, that become a serious sin. And it's a sin against justice, and so just like the seventh commandment, if you have stolen, you should do your best to restore, right? When you gossip, it's a form of stealing. You steal the person's good name. So you don't want to be forgiven, you should do your best to restore. Now, in the good old days, again, that happens sometimes. Somebody in the village, they might spread the rumor, you know, talking about a nasty thing about a person, and it spread wide and like wildfire. Eventually, the person of conscience wake up, go to confession, and the person, what did he do? He would actually write a formal note of, he would take back what he had been saying, say, you know, those rumors are actually false. I'm sorry that I spread the rumor, and they put it in the town square, you know, in the public place, people could see. So that's how people make a restitution for that kind of sin. But, you know, some of the catechism books do mention that it's a kind of restitution can be more difficult to do than stealing. You know, if you steal something, it's the stuff, you can just give it back or give donation, but you steal somebody's good name, when the word is out, it's hard to take back. Right? I think you all heard the story of St. Philip Neri, right? When he gave a penance to somebody who gossiped, asked the person to actually drop the feather, you know, and then later on, when the person finished that penance, coming back, and then St. Philip Neri asked the person to go back and take them all up again, and it seemed like impossible. So it's a lesson to the person. When you gossip, it's like that. It's like the feather being scattered. It's hard to gather them again. So don't gossip. Don't gossip. Sometimes it can happen that it's not you who gossip. It's somebody else who gossip. You know, people who were talking about a bad thing. You know, first of all, my advice is that if there are some people that always gossip, you know, you might have to consider, is that really a good friend to be a friend, you know? It's like really a good friend to be a friend with. You know, I think it's better to associate with people who are not gossiper than to associate with people who are gossiper. But anyhow, when somebody do gossip, I would say a few things we have to avoid. First, avoid taking pleasure. You know, sometimes you might not say anything, but you really think, I really like those kind of scene, or you know, I really like those kind of, I really like that person, the fact that he's doing bad, you know. So don't take pleasure in the wrong thing, you know, of the bad thing. And the second one is, don't encourage, you know, don't say to the person, oh, tell me more, you know, or so extreme interest, knocking the head, wow, yeah, good stuff. You know, you don't say anything, but just by your gesture, you already show that you like to listen more. So you're actually doing something to promote the person to say even more, you know. And the third one is that if you are able to change the subject, do so. If you're able to, you know, sometimes, you know, if it is within a church circle, it can always say, you know, I think, yeah, that person do need our prayer. You know, things like that, that how somehow change the subject. Sometimes it may not be that easy to do that, you know, but if you can do that, do so. But, you know, but first two points is important to remember. Don't take pleasure, you know, don't rejoice in the bad thing in other people's life. You know, that's what I mean. But, and then also don't encourage further gossip. You know, sometimes it can be by not showing intense interest, it can be a good way to just let it be over. Okay. So, gossiping. You all know how to gossip, so I don't have to mention too much. There is something that is, or you all listened to gossip before, is something that, if you are not living alone, it's hard to avoid. I know that. You know. Yeah. Now.
We shouldn't say. We really need to pray for so and so because blah 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
That's gossip.
No. I say that if somebody already gossiping, then you can change that into. I think we should pray for.
No, but to use it as a means to be able to gossip.
No, you don't use that.
Yeah.
You use that. You can use that as a means to raise the people who are gossiping to a higher level. But you don't use that as a way to you don't use the prayer intention as a bulletin board, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And bulletin.
Yeah.
And on the internet.
Sometimes it's internet can be a lot of gossip around. You know, one of the practices, I don't quite like it, but it's happened. And you know, when we were in seminary, there is a prayer of the faithful every day at the weekday mass. You know, I don't do prayer for faith. I don't do prayer for faithful at the weekday mass myself. But when they do that, one thing is that they do let people to like simultaneously to say their intention, you know, to say their intention. And sometimes you just don't know how long it will last. You know, people say this and that intention. And then the former abbot, you know, he is a former abbot. He died around the year 1992 or 1993. The first abbot, Father Abbot Eugene, he say that, you know, the prayer of the faithful is almost like a bulletin board. You know what's going on? You know, people say that intention, you know, it's just like a bulletin board. And, but I prefer to be liturgically more uniform, you know, just, you know, what to expect every single day instead of, you know, simultaneous, everybody can say whatever. And then sometimes, you know, it happened before that somebody say, their catechism, you know, people can be, some people can be, their catechism is not that well yet, and they go in the seminary already. And so one of the priests, he mentioned that, you know, somebody in the seminary at the mass, in the morning mass, actually say to pray for people who are in hell, which is pretty useless. If you're in hell, you cannot be prayed for. So anyhow, did I gossip? Sorry. Okay, the third part is that secret. So when there's some secret that we have to keep, that can be natural secret, promise secret, or professional secret. No, natural secret would be, you know something about the person, and common sense tell you, you shouldn't tell it to anybody else. So I pick a trick on them. They tell me what year they belong to, and I calculate, and I know their age. I shouldn't just say out loud, you know what? They are this age and their age. That common sense tell you. Woman doesn't want that to happen. You know, don't tell the age, don't publish the age of somebody, you know, or Kimberly, you know, her age, you know.
Everybody knows.
Yeah. So it's a natural secret. You know something about the person. Common sense tell you don't tell it to people. Just don't do it. Promise secret. I tell you something. Can you promise me not to tell anybody, especially Kimberly? Yes? Okay, I tell you. So that's promise secret. You promise me, you will keep secret. I tell you something, that promise secret. Professional secret. Okay, because a counselor knows something about the person because of his position. A priest, spiritual direction. Or even more serious, confession. So that professional secret. So those secrets, you know, you just keep them. Don't tell it to other people. Especially professional secret will be more serious. Now, but beside confession, you know, confession is basically called absolute secrecy. You cannot say anything to people. But of the other secret, because it's a positive precept, there can be exception. And you know those, you know. When you are a social worker, you know somebody going to do something really, really crazy and harmful to other people, you call the police, you know. Because, you know, that it's a positive precept, that can be exception. So that will be exception. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. What about sharing stuff with your spouse?
Sharing stuff with your spouse. That's really interesting, you know. I think sometimes you can do that without mentioning names if it is something that might be something personal, you know. You know, I just joke at the idea, I just gossip, you know, I know I didn't. Because, you know, you mention something people done wrong, but you don't mention any name, you know.
Well, what if it's like a sibling or...
I would just...